If you're a fan of the Resilient Recruiter podcast, I've got exciting news. I'm hosting a special event for recruitment business owners in London on September 17th and 18th, and I'd love you to join us. If you want to achieve your full potential, you need to surround yourself with the right people. At the Recruitment Coach Live Summit, you'll get to meet some of my podcast guests in person, hang out with us, and share ideas. Some of the folks I've interviewed on the show will either be attending or speaking at the summit. Early bird pricing is still available. Register now by visiting recruitmentcoach.com/summit.
A lot of recruiters only charge fee-based. So they're like, wait, you want me to pay you before you've given me a hire? Like, that's psychotic. And I'm like, okay, well, that's good luck. Like, okay. So I think it shows them they can trust me. It shows them I'm not trying to bamboozle them. And it shows them that I'm here for your repeat partnership. Like, I'm not trying to like nickel and dime you out of every individual placement. I want to be your go-to recruitment partner for the entirety of the existence of your business. So it's been about 14 months total, and we're at almost 700K in that time. So wow. I did not expect that. Like, that's part of what was so scary to me is I have never closed a deal a day of my life.
Welcome to the Resilient Recruiter Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Whitby, and today I'm joined by Julia Arpag. We're recording in person in Atlanta, Georgia, and I couldn't be more excited to meet Julia in person. Julia is the founder of Aligned Recruitment. She recruits technologists internationally for small and medium-sized businesses. She just launched her business in 2023, so a little over a year old. She's already closed over $500,000 in business, which is incredible by any measure, especially considering that 2023 for many recruiters was their worst ever year in technology recruitment. Julia, thank you so much for being here. I'm excited to meet you.
Thank you, Mark. I'm so excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
So how did you get into recruiting?
Oh, the same as everyone else. I'm a people person. I've always been an extrovert. I'm the oldest of seven kids, so it wasn't really an option to not be an extrovert growing up in my family. Graduated college, didn't really know what to do, and stumbled into recruiting higher ed, so actually recruiting high schoolers to go to college at the college that I worked for at the time. That was when I lived in New York with my husband. Then we moved to Atlanta for his job, and again, I just stumbled into another type of recruitment job and was offered a position in corporate recruitment and loved it. So I've been doing that for about 7 years now.
Amazing. Yeah. All right. And what was it about, obviously, apart from being a people person, what was it about recruiting that clicked for you?
Oh my gosh. I just love that I was solving problems for two people at the same time. Like, I'm getting the hiring manager this amazing person for their team, and I'm getting this amazing person an amazing job. Like, everyone wins. Recruitment's a win-win. I just love it.
All right. That's cool. So a lot of our listeners are, not all, but many are business owners. Mm-hmm. And so 2023 was the year you took the big leap. What prompted that, or what motivated that?
Yeah. So I'd been thinking about it for about a year. The company I was working for before as an agency recruiter, I really enjoyed it, but I'd been there for about 2 years. I'd moved up to leadership. So I kind of saw the inside scoop. Like, I knew how much we were charging our clients. I knew how much I was making. There was a pretty big disconnect. So I was like, man, I could do this. Like, I could run my own company, but it's terrifying. It's so scary to go out on your own and do all the things by yourself. So I kind of was waiting. I don't really know what for, but I was waiting. And then my former boss and CEO was, this is going to sound crazy, but honestly, it was a gift. He laid me off when I was 5 weeks postpartum. I had just had my fourth son.
Oh my God.
And he called me and he was like, hey, I hate to do this, but like, essentially the company's shutting down. Like, he let everyone go. Tech's been in a crazy low kind of spiral for a couple years now. So he was like, there just isn't business. Like, we just don't have clients. So I honestly was not upset. If anything, I was like, all right, like, I know something amazing's coming. So I put the word out to my network. I got 6 job offers within 2 weeks, which was a huge blessing. One of them was from my former co-founder here at Aligned Recruitment. She was like, hey, let's go into business together. You're the best recruiter I've ever met. I can do the back end kind of operation side. You do the forward facing sales and recruitment side. So we partnered up. And the rest is history.
Wow. Okay. There's a lot to unpack there.
That's a lot. We can slow down.
All right. So take me back to your 4 months after your son was born.
5 weeks.
5 weeks.
Yes.
Okay. And your CEO calls you and says, we're letting you go. Now, in hindsight, you're seeing the silver lining and that mm-hmm. this was a blessing in disguise. But what was going through your mind at the time?
I know this is going to sound so annoying, Mark, but I really am peaceful in crisis. Like, I truly, in that
wow,
moment.
So you really are that
I'm
person,
not kidding.
Right?
Like, in that moment, I really was like, thank you so much for letting me know. I'm sorry that you have to make all these calls. Like, he called our whole team and let everyone
horrible.
Go. Right.
Yeah.
And so, and I know it killed him. Like, I worked closely with him. We traveled together. We went to conferences together. Like, I liked him. He was a great leader. So I truly knew he wouldn't have made that decision if he didn't literally have to. So no, true. And I'd seen the writing on the wall, right? Like, we all saw the tech industry really struggle. So I wasn't shocked. Okay. I was bummed about the timing. Like, I literally had a newborn, right? I had a 5-week-old. But again, I really trusted in that moment. I was like, I know that something better is coming.
Okay. And so at what stage did it go from there to, I'm going to launch my own firm?
The same day.
Okay. That's awesome. Wow.
I'm really intense. Like, I move fast. Like, so I got that call from him sometime in the afternoon, maybe like 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock. I immediately put out the word to like everyone I know. Like, I was like, hey, FYI, I just got laid off. You know, I have all these children. If anyone is interested in like helping me, I will take it. So, like I said, I'd already been playing with launching my own firm. And so that was one of the words I put out. I had two friends that both were entrepreneurs. One, Alana, my former co-founder, and another, my friend Sue, who is who runs her own recruitment business. Just she's a solopreneur. So that's where two of my offers came from. Both offered for me to come on board with them. Obviously, Alana's the one that I took. But yeah, pretty quickly, I was like, man, this would be an awesome... And I needed to get kicked out of the nest. And this was a really good opportunity for me to basically take advantage of getting kicked out and then run with it.
So that's a great way of looking at it, getting kicked out of the nest.
Yeah.
Let's just circle back for a second to the... You had the entrepreneurial ambition much earlier than that.
Yeah.
But you didn't do it. What do you think was blocking you?
There was so much I didn't know. Okay. So I didn't know how to file an LLC. I didn't know how to do sales. I have never run a 360 recruitment desk.
Oh, really?
Until the day I started my business.
Oh my gosh.
No, I haven't sold a single thing. I couldn't, you know, some people could like sell ice to an Eskimo. I don't think I could sell a fire pit to an Eskimo. Like, I just, like, I'd never have done sales. So there was so much I didn't know. I was good at recruitment. I knew that. But there's so much that goes into running a business that I had never done, didn't know how to do it, and didn't know if I'd be good enough at it to actually be successful.
Okay, that makes total
sense. Doesn't that make sense?
Yeah, now I'm with you. So then you got this push unexpectedly, but that you needed to say, do you know what? I'll figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
So at what point did you decide, because you had all these offers, which is mm-hmm. very affirming and, mm-hmm. and you know, complimentary, but you very quickly decided, no, I'm just going to go for it and do my own thing. Like, how long did you think about those offers?
So I actually said yes to two.
Okay.
I said yes to Alana and running Aligned Recruitment. And I said yes to a full-time offer for another job. And my thinking was, I know, right? Because the full-time offer was actually as a project manager with a tech company. So I actually would be pivoting from recruitment to project management.
Okay.
So I was like, okay, these don't... I flagged it to both. I was like, hey, guys, I want to do both these things. Is that cool? And they were both like, yes, or whatever. Like, everyone was like, no big deal. So I immediately started working about 5 hours a week on Aligned Recruitment. And the plan was to go full time once I finished my mat leave, which I wanted it to be 4 months with the other company. So my plan for several months was to do that. And then about 2 months into part time working on Aligned Recruitment, it just took off so much faster than I anticipated that I was like, wow, all the things I was afraid of, I've done them and they've gone well. And I would rather do this. Like, it excited me way more to run my own business, get to make my own decisions, get to be my own boss. Yeah. So seeing that is what made me make the leap and you know, graciously say to the people that had offered me the job that I'd accepted, because I'm a recruiter, so I know how terrible it is when someone accepts a job and then unaccepts it. But they were so gracious that they actually became my third client. So now they're on board. Yeah, so it totally worked out. Yeah. But yeah, I would say it took a couple months of me kind of doing both and then realizing, no, I want to go all in on the business.
How do you even do recruiting business part-time? I can't even quite get my head around how I mean, I don't fully understand why both those parties said, yeah, sure, because that sounds crazy to me.
It was but crazy, yeah.
How do you even, you must be way more efficient than I am, but how do you do it part-time?
I guess the same way you do anything. Like, you just decide how much time you can realistically commit to it. Mm-hmm. And then I just communicated that very clearly. Okay. So to my partner at the time, I was like, I can commit 5 to 10 hours a week to this. Like, I still want to take my maternity leave. I still am home with my baby. Like, we didn't have a sitter. Like, I was home with my, you know, 1 month old.
So you were launching this business while you were on mat leave.
Yeah. Like, parenting full time, up at night with a newborn. Yeah. Like, doing.
You're a crazy woman.
I'm a crazy woman. No one's going to disagree with you on that. Yeah. Crazy. I just set my own boundaries and set my own schedule. And then if a client ever wanted to meet during times that my baby wasn't sleeping, I would have a nanny cam come in for like an hour and she would watch him for an hour while I was pitching our services. And then when I would close the deal, we would hire a recruiter and they would actually do delivery. So I was really just kind of in a sales seat for those first couple months.
Okay.
And that's how we made it work.
I think it's more doable to do sales part-time than recruiting part-time.
I don't know how you do recruiting part-time to speak to that. Yeah. Unless you maybe only work on like one role, but yeah. So that's okay. How it works for us.
All right. So, wow, this is super interesting. So when did you go all in on aligned recruitment?
November 4th, 2023.
Okay.
November. So about 13 months ago.
Okay.
No, sorry. 11 months ago.
Wow. This is like still so new.
It's very new.
And it's like you've just taken off like a rocket. So, okay, from November, talk to me about what the last 11 months has been like. What have been the highs? What have been the lows?
Oh my gosh, so many highs, so many lows. So I would say my biggest high was getting the clarity that I wanted to buy out my former co-founder. I still like her. We're still friends. We parted on amicable terms, which I know is very rare. But both she and I realized we wanted to be the CEO. Like, the same thing that made me want to be an entrepreneur is what made her want to be an entrepreneur. And we like each other, but we both wanted to be at the helm of the ship. So basically, the fact that we had such an amicable agreement, like, we very quickly came to a number for me to buy her out that felt fair to both of us. She transitioned out very seamlessly. She actually, we're both young moms, so she actually was pregnant with her second. So when she left to go out on mat leave in March, we negotiated the buyout a couple months later, and then she left in March and then just never really came back. Like that, so that kind of worked out, which I know is like unheard of. Everyone I've told that story to is like,
how... You seem to be amicable with everybody that you part ways with.
Oh, that's very gracious. I don't see a reason to burn bridges, right? Yeah. Like, I know that everyone, I really believe in the adage that everyone's doing the best they can with what they have. So I don't hold it against her that we just had, honestly, the same desire.
Yeah. Like, can only be one CEO.
There really can't.
Sure.
Yeah. And we thought about being co-CEOs, but that's tough.
I don't know how that works.
I don't know. I know some people do it and I know it can work, but for us, we didn't want to do it. So that was a big win. That was a huge blessing.
When was this?
We started the buyout conversations in, I think May.
Okay.
And then the buyout was official. It was very fast. The buyout was official in June.
Okay.
And then we both agreed that I had until August to officially pay her the full sum that we agreed on. So okay. I officially made the last payment July 31st. And starting August 1st, like, I was officially out totally on my own.
So this is still very new. Then.
We've had a hilarious first year. My CPA was like, I don't think I've ever had someone launch a business and buy their partner out in the same year. Like, he was like, don't do anything half-assed. And I was like, no, I don't. So that was a huge blessing. I mean, like you mentioned already, our revenue was unexpected. Like, I did not expect... I came on board part-time August 31st. So it's been about 14 months total, and we're at almost 700K in that time. So
wow.
I did not expect that. Like, that's part of what was so scary to me is I have never closed a deal a day of my life. So I was like, just had no expectation for how it would go.
Okay, let's dig into this because I think this is what people are really going to be curious about.
Sure.
So until you launched your business, you had no sales. Recruiting is sales, right?
Gosh, people say that.
It's not new business.
I think recruiting is way easier than sales, I'll be honest.
Right, but you are
I'm pitching an opportunity.
Yeah,
yes, there are some sales-related skill sets, but I used to say recruiting is sales. And now that I've done sales, I see the nuances. I see that when you're selling something, there's so much more kind of like on the table versus if you're recruiting, you're like, hello, would you like a $150,000 job? And they're like, yeah. Like, it's a little bit easier.
Right. There's no money changing hands.
Right. Right.
You're not selling them something they have to buy.
Yeah.
You're offering them an opportunity that could accelerate their career development and so on. I get it. It's easier. But I guess the underlying transferable skills, building relationships, influencing people, negotiating, qualifying.
Yes.
Those types of things are transferable.
Absolutely.
But no doubt, getting clients is harder.
Mm-hmm.
So how did you make that shift and start to sell?
So I was very fortunate that I did not have a non-compete with my former employer.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very compelling story that I was laid off 5 weeks postpartum. Like, people were like, what? So all my former clients basically got on calls with me because they were like, are you joking? Like, I just reached out and was like, hey, this is what happened. We had a great working relationship. Like, I'd love to chat with you if you're open. So my first three clients were all former clients of mine.
Perfect.
From a previous employer.
That's beautiful.
So that was
great.
Huge.
Yeah.
That was huge. Two of them to this day are still clients. Like, they're on retainer. I do both retained and contingent searches. Both are retainers. Both are still with me. And then my other business over the course of the year has, been, you know, some former clients, some people I met at networking events here in Atlanta, some that were referrals from former clients or former colleagues or executive coaches I've worked with, you know, whoever. So yeah, a lot of it is, like you said, that relationship building skill set has really served me well. And that's where all my business has come from, honestly.
Amazing. So you immediately reached out to everyone in your network, former clients, and just told them your story. And, you know, people wanted to do business with you.
Mm-hmm.
So that's brilliant. Let's zoom out for a second here. Could you explain? I know you do technology recruiting.
Yes.
For small and medium-sized companies primarily.
Yeah.
I believe you recruit internationally.
We do, yeah.
And so what is your business model?
Our business model is typically a retainer. So normally the way that I go to market is I say, hey, I don't want you to have to pay an exponential fee when I fill this role, because I will fill this role. So it's better for you and better for me and my team if we move forward with a monthly retainer. And then we typically go to market for software engineering roles. Those are typically the roles that we fill. But when our clients come to us and say, hey, do you do sales? Do you do executive? Do you do operations? Typically my answer is yes, because I personally believe, like, I like functioning as an extension of my client. Like, I want to be more like a fractional recruiter than like a contingent gunslinging, like, I just chuck a resume over the fence and run away. Like, mm-hmm. I ideally like to be in a seat where I take on all of the roles they need to recruit. So those are my favorite clients to work for, the ones who don't have an in-house recruiting team, mm-hmm. and we can come on board and be that in-house recruiting team without them having to take on the risk of actually hiring an in-house recruiter.
Makes total sense. I love that. And I love the monthly retainer model. So what's the agreement then? Like, how, because this is the challenge is, if you're charging per placement,
mm-hmm.
that's an easy calculation,
mm-hmm.
right? It's whatever percent you charge of the, you know, starting salary, what
mm-hmm.
have you. When you're on more of a subscription model, then is that for a set number of placements, or is it scalable? Like, how does that actually work?
Yeah. So we charge per number of roles they want us to work on. So we've worked on anywhere from 1 to 8 roles at a time
mm-hmm.
for any of our clients. So then, yeah, we just increase that number. Once you hit 5, you get a steep discount because
mm-hmm.
we want to obviously honor that you're doing a lot of business with us. But yeah, it's just a charge per role. And then it's a 30-day cancellation notice. So if you, most of my, again, my bigger clients have continual need. So I fill one role, they slot in another one, and we just never stop working with them. Like, that's why I have those 2 long-term retainers. Most of my clients are smaller businesses. So we fill a role and they're like, okay, I'm good for 6 months. I'll circle back to you when I need another role filled.
But how does that work on a monthly then if they only have one need?
I estimate for them. So let's say, like, I recently filled a COO. I was like, executive level search, I would estimate that'll take me about 3 months on average. So okay. Just so you upfront have an idea of what it will take. My favorite thing is under-promising and then over-delivering. Mm-hmm. So that COO fill actually took 2 months, mm-hmm. but I say the average to kind of prepare them. And then when I'm in the sales process, I'm just very upfront. I'm like, this is what I would estimate it'll take. And I've honestly never, in the year I've been in business, I've never gone over the estimate that I anticipated for them. And like I said, a lot of my clients have just stayed on even after I filled that one role.
Which is exact. I mean, that's what we want is a long-term partnership,
yes.
right? And
yeah.
totally. So you're growing with them.
Yeah.
And so the retainer is based on, I'm trying to get my head around it, Julia. So you estimate how many roles they're looking to fill today, but doesn't that fluctuate? Or do they tell you, this is how many roles we want to fill in the next 12 months?
No. So usually they say, usually they come to me with one role. They're like, we okay. want you to fill one role.
Yep.
And they're testing me, which is appropriate. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, great. Like, see how I do on this role. And then if it goes well, and if you have other roles to fill, we'll ramp up to 2, 3, whatever. Okay. But yeah, that's normally how it works. They tell me how many roles they need.
Okay, got it. So it's, and then what happens if you get out of sync, for example, like, they paid you a retainer based on one role, but they end up hiring 3.
So,
what's the difference?
Yeah. Let me. So that's a great question, and let me. I'm pausing because there's nuance there. So, if it's 3 of the same role, like let's say they had a Python developer mm-hmm. and they needed that filled, but I ended up finding them 3 candidates who were so good that they hired 3 Python developers. Mm-hmm. Congratulations. You just hired 3 amazing developers for 1 flat monthly rate.
Oh, wow.
Way
you don't
to go.
Charge them anymore?
No, I don't.
Okay.
No, I don't.
Wow, that's very generous.
That's why I've closed 7. Like, but do you see how the money has followed?
Sure.
Like, the money
oh,
has
yeah.
followed my generosity. So it's not, it's kind of a perfect relationship because for them, it's scary, right? A lot of recruiters only charge fee-based. Yeah. So they're like, wait, you want me to pay you before you've given me a hire? Like, that's psychotic. And I'm like, okay, well, that's good luck. Like, okay. So I think it shows them they can trust me. It shows mm-hmm. them I'm not trying to bamboozle them. And it shows them that, well, honestly, it shows both of us that, like, I'm here for your repeat partnership. Like, I'm not trying to, like, nickel and dime you out of every individual placement. I want to be your go-to recruitment partner for the entirety of the existence of your business.
I love that. Okay, cool. Now, so you said there's nuance. If it's 3 Python developers, great.
So here's the nuance. Right.
Yeah.
So if I'm like, let's say I'm working on a Python developer and then they're like, hey, we also need you to hire a .NET developer. Mm-hmm. I'm like, great. That's going to be a second role that we'll need to open and a second mm-hmm. retainer that you'll need to pay
okay.
for.
Okay.
So if it's a totally different search, yeah. then that's going to take obviously a lot of time for my team to focus on that role now. So you would need to either can't like end recruiting for the Python and do the .NET instead, yeah. or we'll do both at the same time and then I'll charge you for both.
Okay. So that all makes total sense.
Okay.
And then the other part that you mentioned earlier was when you win a client, do you also hire a recruiter for that client?
Great question.
But then if they're only needing one, that wouldn't make sense. It would only make sense if there was ongoing needs.
Yes, exactly. So back in my mat leave, when I was only working 5-10 hours a week, we hired contractors. So we said, hey, listen, this is a part-time role. We have one role for you to work on. We don't know if there's going to be more. And that worked because, again, my entire team from my old recruitment agency got laid off. So all those amazing recruiters
oh, wow.
were you friends already... of mine.
Okay.
And so I was like, hey, I know you're looking for a full-time gig. Like, if you get an offer and you have to leave me, I get it. But in the meantime, we'd love to have you here as a contract recruiter. Mm-hmm. So 2 of my former colleagues worked with us as contractors for a couple months when we were ramping. They both ended up landing full-time gigs elsewhere and they're killing it. They're amazing at what they do. So then what we did from there is one of the long-term retainers that we signed, he actually signed a 1-year retainer with us. So I was able to hire a full-time recruiter because it was a full-time contract. Like it was like, we are going to need a full-time resource on this client. So she's also from my old recruitment agency. She's a genius. I adore her. So she's been working on that client for the whole year. So I was able to make that full-time hire. And then my 2 most recent hires, one was for an operations manager. Because like I said, that wasn't my skill set. I didn't come from there. So she does that. So no matter how many clients I have, I need an operations manager.
Yep.
So she's been amazing. And then the other hire that I just made is for a sourcer. So again, no matter how many roles I have, like I still recruit, like I'm selling and recruiting myself. So even if, let's say we get to a point where only I have recs on the board, she would just support me on those recs and recruit on them. And then I plan to scale that way. That's kind of my forward thinking motion at this time.
Okay. That sounds brilliant. It's a really smart model, Julia, because your delivery, your fulfillment side of the business is flexible. Mm-hmm. It's based on the need, how much demand you have coming in. This is always the juggling act as an owner is like, you don't want to have tons of fulfillment capability and not enough clients.
Yes.
That's bad. Yes. That's burning cash.
Yes.
On the other hand, you don't want to enroll clients and then struggle to deliver. Mm-hmm. That's bad, mm-hmm. right? That's not going to result in repeat business. Mm-hmm. So you've figured out how to create this flexible model, which is smart. So what's the sort of size and shape of the team currently? You've got operations manager, you've got sourcer, you've got one full-time recruiter?
Yes. So she's actually been promoted to our director of talent acquisition.
Oh, great.
Because not only is she full-time on that client, she's also stepped up internally. And she actually those contractors we had before they got their full-time gigs, she managed them. Yep. And then she does some higher level operational stuff, like almost like COO level. Okay. So she's doing maybe 5 hours a week in my business and then 40 hours a week for her client is kind of how the delineation works. So right now it's just the four of us. So the operations great. Manager, the director of talent acquisition, the sourcer, and myself.
Okay. That's a great team.
It's
after,
a great team. I have, you know, a freaking kick-ass team. I
yeah.
love, yeah. And they're phenomenal. They're unbelievable. Yeah.
Wow.
I'm very lucky.
That's brilliant. I think you've shortcutted the process because how many of these folks did you already know?
Just the one.
Oh, just the...
So that the one who's now my director of talent acquisition.
Got it.
So the two contractors I had, yeah. I knew them before as well.
Right, but not your operations.
Not my operations manager, okay. And not my sourcer. Both okay. of them I met actually. There's a coaching group that like goes out and sources recruitment specific people.
Ah.
So they sourced them for me. I interviewed them, of course, yep. but their process is they source them and then they actually train them on how to work within a recruitment business. Okay. So that's who found those two people for me. And they've been incredible. They've been with me for about, it's been pretty short, like 4 to 6 months each. Or sorry, 4 to 6 weeks each.
Okay, fantastic.
Yeah.
I think it's really valuable to recruit people you already know if they're good, right?
Yes, that's
and
ideal.
So your director of recruitment, that's so valuable. It's, as a business owner, it's always difficult to do your own recruiting,
mm-hmm.
right? It's much easier to recruit for your client,
mm-hmm.
but when it's your business, this is what I find is a bottleneck to growth for many recruitment business owners is finding the right people for your team.
Mm-hmm.
So it sounds like you're on a roll there, Julia.
Yeah, very grateful. It's really worked out.
So tell me a little bit more about this international element, because I guess there's different ways of doing this. You can either recruit locally, you can recruit nationally, or you can recruit internationally. But typically what I see is if you're local, then you're broader in scope in terms of the types of roles you fill. And then the more geographically spread out you are, the more you niche down in terms of like your area of specialism. How does it work in your business?
Yeah. Well, so again, I go to market for software engineers.
Yeah.
Like that is typically my niche role.
Okay.
And then I expand from there depending on what my client needs, if it's a role that I do feel confident that my team can fill. So because we've niched down so much to really just focusing on filling software engineers, a lot of people who are hiring software engineers are remote companies, or at least their engineering team is remote because you just need like a computer to code.
Yeah.
And a lot of them are starting to go overseas for talent because you can get geniuses for much less than you can here in the US.
Yeah.
So for example, one of my retainer clients, we hire a lot in Costa Rica for them.
Mm-hmm.
Another one of my retainer clients, we hire throughout South and Central America.
Mm-hmm.
So we've run searches essentially wherever the client needs us to run the search.
Okay, let's go in this direction because this is super interesting. The remote aspect and then also the... taking advantage of international talent pools.
Yeah.
So first of all, are your clients based in Atlanta or your clients are all over as well?
I've closed 16 clients in this first year. Two are based here in Atlanta.
Okay, great. And where are the other ones then?
Most of them actually run remote businesses. So okay. Almost none of them have physical offices. Wow. So the individual CEOs that I spoke with, like one lives in LA, one lives in Pennsylvania. They're all over the place.
Okay, wow.
Yeah. That's one's in cool. Kansas City. Yeah, they're all over.
Great. So do you intentionally go after companies that are fully remote? Or like if a company came to you and said, we want to recruit an office, would you take that search?
I will if it's the right fit. So one of my retainer clients, they are based here in Atlanta. They are exclusively an in-office team. Mm-hmm. And that is something I'm comfortable pitching because I'm completely upfront in my first message. Yeah. This is a 100% in-office role. We're not hybrid. We're not remote. Like if this is the right fit for you, great. If not, no hard feelings. Mm-hmm. So no, I don't mind recruiting for in-office roles. I work remotely. My whole team is remote. No one else is based here in Atlanta. So I'm very comfortable recruiting remotely. And I think the reason so many of my clients have ended up being remote is because, again, in tech, you can be. And it's so much cheaper. Like for you to not have to pay for an office space, for you to not have to pay, like let's say you're based in San Francisco, talent in San Francisco is twice as much as talent in like Wyoming.
Right.
So I think I end up attracting a lot of those clients because of the flexibility.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense. And then you're recruiting internationally, but so that sounds almost overwhelming because there's so many places you could go. Do you decide the market, like where we're going to find the best talent, or does the client, or do you have, like, how does that conversation work?
They decide.
Okay.
So that's part of our model. That's part of why it works, because I know a lot of contingent agencies are like, we only fill let's say Angular developer roles because they just have a pool of 100 really good Angular developers who they just like chuck at clients. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But I think part of why people do go with us is because it's a completely tailored bespoke search for every single role. So if you come to me and say, hey, I want a QA engineer with 3 years of experience and I want them to be based in South America. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, I'm going to go run that search for you. I don't have a pool of 30 candidates to send you right now. Mm-hmm. I might if I've run that exact same search before, but more often than not, I'm going to market and actually finding that person for you.
How do they know that South America is the best market? Like,
typically they've recruited there before.
Okay.
Or I have had some clients that have come and asked, like, hey, where do you think we should target for this? And I'll say that we've recruited for other clients in these markets. Yeah. These are the comp benchmarks that you could expect in those markets. So I can give them that information if they come to me asking, but usually they already have an idea because they've already done it there before.
Okay, that makes total sense. Here's my big question, Julia, is usually in recruiting, your fee is tied to the salary.
Yeah.
Does that mean that, but if you're recruiting someone in South America, the salary's going to be a lot lower. Does mm-hmm. that mean your fee is a lot less?
No.
Okay.
I charge, so on the retainer, again, I offer both. So I offer retainer and contingent.
Okay.
So my retainer fee is the same, no matter the salary of the candidate.
Gotcha.
And then my contingent fee is 25% of the base salary. But I do not offer that if you're recruiting internationally, because that's too low.
Yes.
So if you're recruiting internationally, you only can do retainer.
Okay. So the retainer is a fixed fee.
Yes.
Got it. Okay. This is all making sense now.
Okay.
All right. Fantastic. This is so interesting. I don't know anybody else who's doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
I think it is a really interesting model. Ironically, so I'm speaking here in Atlanta for the Pinnacle Society tomorrow. And my presentation is called Time Freedom Formula, How to Leverage Your Time by Recruiting Internationally for Your Recruiting Business.
Amazing.
And I'm going to talk about, in our case, I don't love the term virtual assistant because it implies someone's going to be doing, like it's more like a PA doing admin and that kind of thing. And there's a lot more different types of roles that you could recruit for your business, you know, in other countries. Mm-hmm. But I don't know many recruiting firms who are doing it. In fact, I can't think of any that are doing what you're doing. So it's super cool.
Well, I hope they start doing it. There's a lot of opportunity. Like anyone listening to this, like go do it.
Well, it kind of solved, because there's a huge talent shortage in tech. Ironically, even though tech's having a hard time and, you know, you would think, well, the hard part's finding the client, but actually it's both. It's also still mm-hmm. hard finding the candidate as mm-hmm. well, right?
Yeah, that's fair.
So you're just giving yourself so much more scope to be able to mm-hmm. find that person mm-hmm. and you're not competing with the other tech firms in San Francisco for the other local
the other seven developers, engineers that are willing to make a move from where they are right
now. Exactly. Yeah. So that is
this opens up for opportunity.
That is super smart. What are the we've talked about some of the pros. What are some of the pitfalls or some of the challenges of your model?
Oh, great question. Pitfalls and challenges of my model. I've really gone back and forth about, am I niched enough? Like, should I be? Like, because most recruitment agencies are like, we only recruit this one very specific role. And we do have a bench of 30 people. Like, if I closed a deal today, I could send them 10 candidates today if I used that model.
Yeah.
So I really have played with, would I prefer that? And I've even trialed it. Like, in the year that I've run my business, like I said, like, we normally go to market with software engineering recruitment. Ultimately, like I said, I prefer to work as a fractional recruitment arm. Like, that's just how I want to run my business. That's how I like to engage with my clients. That's how my clients like to engage with me. So that's been, I wouldn't say a pitfall, but that has definitely been a struggle. Like, where I've really given a lot of time and space and just pondering to that question.
I think you've found the solution. Here's why. When you say we go to market for software engineers, right? That implies that that is your core focus.
Mm-hmm.
And also you've got a specialism in terms of we work with small and medium-sized businesses in technology, right? Now, how do you delineate that from what to what? Is it like revenue, number of employees, funding round? What's the...
Good question. So typically our clients are 200 employees or less.
Yep.
The majority of our the majority of our clients, I would say, are probably more like 25 employees or less.
Okay.
So we're working with a hyper small, again, because my preference is to work with them as their internal recruitment agency, like where they don't need to have their own in-house recruiter. So that only really makes sense if you're that small.
Yeah. Okay. So I'd say you do have a niche, right? It's technology companies with fewer than 200 and probably fewer than 25 employees who are looking to scale and you're recruiting engineers, software engineers for them. Now, so the way, because we get this question all the time in our coaching program, Julia, is like, I understand the benefits of being a specialist and focusing on a niche market, but I don't want to walk away from business front with a good client and I think I can fill the job. I'm like, well, fine, don't just do the search.
Yeah.
But what you're proactively going after is the software engineering roles.
Right.
Okay. So that's what you're marketing for. That's what you're like your messaging, your content, everything is geared towards that.
Mm-hmm.
But then if you build a relationship and they say, could you fill a VP of sales for us or an operations director or whatever, and you like the partnership, you like the relationship, you think you can fill it, go for it.
Exactly.
So I think that's a fair compromise.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I definitely feel a lot of peace where I've landed.
Yeah.
Like I've wrestled with it, which is why I feel good about it, because I know that I really have kind of teased out all the alternatives. And I agree. I do feel very confident in this space.
Okay. Here's my big question, though, is the challenge with, well, there's a lot of challenges with your market you've chosen.
Sure.
one of which is typically they get to a certain size, then they hire their own internal talent team or person, and then you're offboarded.
Mm-hmm.
That's not ideal, right? Ideally, you want a long-term relationship with clients. Mm-hmm. How have you navigated that?
Well, it hasn't happened yet.
Okay.
I'm hopeful. and yeah, that definitely could happen. Mm. But with all my clients so far, they've seen that we're good at what we do. So they're like, okay, if we need recruitment, we're just going to come back to you. Like, why would we take on the risk of hiring a W-2 recruiter when we could just flex up and flex down with your recruitment model when we need you? And actually, the annual retainer client that we signed, back when I was a recruiter on their client, when I was at my former company, we replaced their entire internal recruitment team.
Oh, interesting.
So they worked with, I think we had three of our recruiters from my old agency working with them and quickly outpaced their internal recruiters. So they actually let their whole internal recruitment team go. And now we became their partners.
Wow, that is such a great case study.
It is a great case study.
Because to be able to say we outperformed the internal recruiter and it was more cost effective to use us.
Yeah.
Also, I think in some ways the down market is to your advantage in that it doesn't make sense to have a large talent team if you're like slowing your growth, right? Mm-hmm. It's kind of, it makes more sense to have a flexible arrangement that you can flex up, flex down.
Yeah.
So, okay, that makes sense. The other challenge, though, because we have some clients who recruit for startups mm-hmm. and technology companies. The other challenge is that they don't know what they're doing. And the client, the CEO has, they're quite immature
sure.
in their journey and like immature maybe as leaders potentially, yeah. but also in terms of how to, their EVP is non-existent. They're sometimes even unprofessional when it comes to the candidate experience
mm-hmm.
and you're having to babysit them and handhold them
yes.
through every step.
Yes.
And so how do you find that?
Yeah, I have clients like that. I think any industry you'd have clients like that. I don't think just tech startups. So that's where what we talked about earlier, like the skill set of like relationship building, that's where that comes in really, really helpful. So I have very close relationships with my candidates. So like just today, this one guy, the last three interviews he's had with this client, they've told him we're the final. And there have been three of those, right? Like today's the third. So he and I have a relationship though where I call him and I'm like, hey, listen, I promise they love you. You would not still be here if they didn't. They are just a very young startup. And that's attractive to the right candidate. Mm-hmm. Like they kind of want that vibe.
Yeah.
So I'm like, yeah, what you see is what you get. It is a little chaotic. It is a little crazy. So I feel like managing the candidate experience is actually not that tough as long as I'm aligned from the beginning on this is their culture, this is how they work.
Yeah.
I hope you're okay with that. On the client side, it can definitely be challenging. Like if they, you know, are so kind of messy internally that they miss their meeting with me or they don't give me feedback, so I don't know what to do on my search. So what I have found to be really helpful is, number one, I text all my clients. Like I have a texting relationship with all my clients and that seems to make them more comfortable communicating with me, like, mm-hmm. oh, I saw you missed our Zoom today. Like, no worries. I'm sure something's on fire. Do you have 2 minutes for me to call you? Or can you just shoot me a quick text response to this question I have for you right now?
You are so nice. Yeah.
Because that's why, if I make it hard for them to work with me,
right,
they're
right.
not going to work with me.
Like, I hear you.
Who benefits if I'm like a jerk to them, right? Like that no one wins. So no, I'm gracious and I'm patient and it usually works out for me.
It obviously is working. It's working out for you. Yeah. So I'm thinking of a client of ours who they had a payments company. It was a fintech company and they're working with the CEO and they were scaling like crazy. This kid, he was literally a kid, had been given millions of pounds to run this company. I can't remember, it was something like 30 million pounds or wow. something. He hadn't even graduated from university yet.
That's crazy.
He was doing this business while going to university.
Wow.
And just had not a clue,
sure.
right, how to run a business. But I guess that's part of your value add is you're coaching, you're consulting.
Yes.
You're helping them to create that talent strategy.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Do you charge for that or is that just part of the
service? It's baked
service?
Into the retainer.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did have one company come to me. We're still in sales conversation, so let's all manifest that they close. But they did actually ask for that to be, like, they want so much consulting that they were like, can you build out a proposal for us to get boots on the ground recruitment delivery as well as extensive consulting? Okay. So if it's going to be like hours and hours a week, like I'll go ahead and create an ad hoc proposal for that. But in general, I think it makes sense for me to bake consulting in because we're both going to be more successful if I'm coaching you as we go. Yeah. And honestly, that, you know, 30 million pound founder, like that's a dream. Like you don't know what you're doing. Great. Let me tell you, like, are you receptive? Like, can we have a conversation about it? Like if anything, you get to kind of teach them how to recruit effectively. They're not coming into it with all these preconceived notions. So that actually sounds awesome.
All right. I love your attitude to all this. Every challenge you're turning into an opportunity.
An opportunity, because it really is. It really yeah. is. Yeah.
Okay. Beautiful. So on the outside looking in, based on everything we've talked about so far, it might appear that like everything's going awesome. You're just smashing it, you know, but I'm sure there's been days which have been rough and points where you're questioning yourself. So what have been the, you know, those setbacks or challenges?
Yes. No, I am so glad you asked that because I think this needs to be a way louder part of the conversation about entrepreneurship. It's so tough. I have had days where I was like literally walking through the grocery store where I was like, do you think they'd hire me as like a checker out lady? Like, can I just scan groceries? Like, that'd be so much easier than what I'm doing right now. So yeah, I mean, the mantle of responsibility is very heavy. Like, you are making, I definitely have had days where I've struggled with decision fatigue because you're making 1,000 decisions a day. And I wanted that, but it's also a lot of responsibility. So some days are so exhausting. And you lose way more deals than you close. You get way more no's than you get yeses. So for the 16 clients that have said yes, oh my God, hundreds, thousands have said no, right? Like, I have so many sales campaigns running and the vast majority say no. So that takes so much perseverance and so much resilience and so much grounding yourself in something bigger than you and something bigger than the daily wins and the daily losses. So for me, I always tie back to my why. Like, this is on my website. Like, I'm very upfront about, I'm a Christian, I'm a mom of four, I am a wife. Like, I am very passionate about my life outside of business because that is why I do my life inside of business.
Awesome. I definitely want to come back and talk about your why.
Sure.
Because that's really, that's what it's all about, isn't it? And so that's an important part. Coming back to then the challenges, decision fatigue, you know, the stress, the responsibility. Have there been any particular moments or experiences where you really questioned yourself or where it was just like, this is a shit show. What am I going to do here?
I mean, every time, like the nature of recruitment is that it's cyclical.
Yeah.
Like, so whenever a client comes to me and they're like, hey, I'm putting in my notice, we're not going to need you moving forward, it's always a gut punch. Yeah. Like, I know it's normal. I know this is the industry I've chosen. Like, I'm not a subscription-based software product. Like, I get that this is the reality of the business, but it's still a gut punch every time. So yeah, those are always my worst days, to be honest, when a client gives notice. Luckily, so far, I haven't had a client give notice because they were unhappy. Mm-hmm. But still, even when it's just the nature of like, we just don't need your services right now, it still sucks.
That does suck. Absolutely. Yeah. That just sucks.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah, for sure.
The end.
All right. I get it. So,
and then like I was saying, the days when you're just like churning your wheels in like a go-to-market motion and nothing's mm-hmm. closing. Like, that's
right.
Gutting. Like, the longest I think I've gone in a row without closing new business was about 2 months. And I know other people have way harder seasons of navigating that. And that may be coming for me down the line. But that's really hard. Even when I go, like, gosh, you've heard in this conversation, I'm very intense. So I'm like, I should have new business closing once a week. Like, what's going on? Like, why are they not streaming through the door? So I have to constantly tell myself, put in the reps. Just put in the reps and eventually the business will come. But it is the daily, like, learning how to sell. Like, I'm still learning very much. I'm 11 months into this. I'm definitely still learning. And then it's the going through the motions of sending the messages, sending the selfies. I do a lot of like LinkedIn selfies or Loom selfies or like just personalizing my sales approach. Like, I do a lot of that, which is tedious and time consuming. Mm-hmm. And by the 20th selfie, you're like, I just want to go eat a snack. Like, I don't want to keep doing this. But just reminding myself, you just like the same way you work out every day, whether you want to or not. Like, you just put in the reps.
Put in the reps. That's going to be one of the catchphrases from this.
Yes.
So there's a few different directions I want to go here. But following up on, we're going to finish on the why.
Sure.
Okay. And also being a mom of four and all that stuff. So that's coming. First, you mentioned all these sales campaigns. And so we teach clients to do personalized Loom videos.
Oh, good.
But what's a selfie? What are you talking about when you talk about a selfie?
So when you're on the LinkedIn app, like on your phone, so when you go to message someone, you can click on like the more menu and then you can click record a video.
Yes.
I forget what the exact language is, but it's basically that's it.
I know.
So then you like put up your phone, you click record, and you're like, hello, I'm Julia. Loved XYZ about your background. Saw that you're hiring a developer. Mm-hmm. Would love to chat and see if we can support you in that search. Let me know if you're open to a call. Or, you know, more personalized than that. But that's essentially what you do.
Yep. Okay.
But tell all your clients, do it.
Awesome. So why do it that way rather than the Loom and then drop the Loom into LinkedIn?
I do both.
Okay. Well, how do you decide which... Which to do?
So first I do the Loom. Mm-hmm. And part of that, like as I'm as I'm sending those messages, I also have a Dripify campaign going that's connection only. Yep. So then I connect with them. And then once they've accepted my connection request, then, because you have to be first degree connected to send a LinkedIn selfie.
Yes, right.
So first I send the Loom to everyone. First, second, third, doesn't matter what the degree it is.
Oh.
And then once they've accepted my connection request, my operations manager has a list of everyone who's accepted that's on my campaign. And then I go through and I send LinkedIn selfies to them as well. So they're getting bombarded with my face.
Okay, I love this. This is brilliant. So, okay, back up.
Sure.
So can you, I'll just stop talking. What is the sales cadence then?
Sure. Here we go. It's going to take a while. So like everyone buckle up. Okay.
Okay.
So number one, I go through LinkedIn and I have someone on Fiverr does this for me. You can get a comical amount of BD support on Fiverr for super cheap.
Okay.
So I have a BD guy. He charges me $10 for 50 leads.
Okay.
So I give him very clear instructions. I'm like, okay, I need you to find companies that are 200 employees or less, are currently hiring a software engineer, basically those are the two parameters, are in the tech industry. And then I need you to find me someone from the C-suite and then someone from engineering leadership. So manager of engineering, director of engineering, CTO, and then also CEO, founder, COO, someone like that.
Okay.
So they pull me two people from each of those categories. Mm-hmm. Then I go through and I send individually recorded Looms for every single one of them where I'm on my laptop. I pull up their LinkedIn profile.
Mm-hmm.
I go through it while I'm talking to them. Then I pull up the job spec and I talk about if I have someone who could fill that role right now, I tell them about them. Or if not, I tell them a recent role I filled that's similar to that one, how long it took me, kind of our metrics of success. Mm-hmm. I send that to them in a personalized email. Like I write an individualized subject line and copy and have that individualized Loom going out. Then once they've accepted the Dripify connection only work campaign. Then once they've accepted it, I go in and do the LinkedIn selfie. So that's one campaign.
So, okay. Press pause just for a second.
Sure.
So the Loom video, how long is that? Because that's
1 minute max.
You fit all of that into 1 minute.
I talk really fast as you've experienced.
I'm noticing that. Okay.
In this conversation. And two, I've slowed down, if you can believe it. But two, my goal is not to like pitch them. Okay. Like my goal is just to introduce myself, make sure they know this is a personalized Loom. This is not like an AI bot spamming you. I just keep it super brief.
Okay, great. So how many of those per day are we?
It depends. So that's one type of campaign I run. So if I'm running that type of campaign, I send 20 of those per day.
Wow. That's yeah. So
I wasn't kidding when I said I get to 20 and
yeah.
I need a snack. Like,
okay,
truly,
yeah.
I've had many days like that.
So 100 a week?
Yeah.
Okay.
When I'm running that type of campaign. So
okay.
I cycle through the types of campaigns. Another type of campaign I do is...
Hold on.
You go.
I've got what are your questions about that?
Yeah, sure.
So you do the Loom videos. You're sending those to anybody, whether you're connected or not.
100%. Yeah. Because okay. I'm sending them via email. I use Apollo to scrape their email.
Okay. Got it. So those are going via email.
Yes.
Gotcha. And then you've got the Dripify campaign running as well.
Yes.
At the same time?
Yes.
Okay. And to connect with them, once they connect, why not just recycle the original video and send it via LinkedIn if they've not already responded to that?
Because the LinkedIn selfie feels more personal and I've gotten way higher response rates to the
really?
LinkedIn
okay,
selfies.
That's interesting.
Significantly higher. Yeah.
Hmm. Okay, that's interesting. I wonder why. Do you have a theory?
My theory is it's more personal. Like it's not businessy. Like if I'm recording a Loom and I've pulled up your LinkedIn, I've pulled up your job spec, like this is business. Like we're chatting. Like I would like you to be my client, please.
Okay.
Versus if I send you a LinkedIn selfie, I don't know if you use Marco Polo, but it's like this like personal messaging app that you can use where it's just like a selfie of you and you talk to your friends. Like it's a personal app.
Okay.
So I think LinkedIn selfies are reminiscent of more personal messaging platforms where people feel like it's like their buddy Julia just like dropping in to check in how their Tuesday's going.
Okay. I'll buy that. That makes sense.
The numbers. I'm just saying I've gotten better response rates.
So and that's the cool thing is you're testing, you're trying different things.
Yeah.
And that's brilliant. So that's one type of campaign that you run. By the way, sidebar, your Fiverr guy, that sounds great, but you could, that's an ideal role for a you get a full-time person doing that for you.
Yes.
Offshore.
Yes.
Who really understands your business and can support, because your Fiverr guy may or may not always be available, right? And that's, they're splitting with other clients. So
totally.
Something to think about. What are the other types of campaigns that you're running then?
Then I have a separate Dripify campaign that's just an automated three-touch messaging campaign. Yeah. Again, with how successful it's been for me to reach out to former clients, mm-hmm. I have that drip campaign running with every client I've ever touched in the history of my life, who maybe I didn't personally recruit on them,
yeah.
but my former employer had them as a client.
Great.
So I'm running that because that's been... So the advice I got from one of my executive coaches was double down on what's working.
Yeah.
So because so many of my clients have been former clients, even if I didn't personally recruit on them, that has been another... And that's just automated. Like I wrote like a in Dripify, there's so many ways you can make it look super personalized.
Yes.
So that's really helpful. But that doesn't take any of my time. I will say when they accept my connection request, I send them a LinkedIn selfie too.
Great.
So basically what I do every day is I go through everyone who accepted my LinkedIn requests. Yeah. And if they're remotely in my ICP, I send them a LinkedIn selfie.
ICP is ideal client profile.
Ideal client profile. Yes. Thank you for defining that.
We call it ideal client avatar. Same thing.
Love it. Love it. Yeah. Same thing. And then I'm not going to go through all of them.
No, that's okay.
I'll end there. I'll stop there. Yeah. There's a lot. Yeah.
People are going to ask. And if I don't ask you, I'm going to get, people will be annoyed. So since we're on this topic, what is your tech stack then?
Oh my gosh, it's so big. Okay, so Dripify, I do spring for a LinkedIn recruiter. I know a lot of recruitment agencies don't. I think that's insane. Like, I think that's like a must have.
Okay.
LinkedIn Sales Nav, Recruiter Flow is my ATS and my CRM.
Oh, they're great. I had the CEO on this podcast.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
he's such a good guy. I love them. Yeah. Like, I was using Breezy, which I thought was the cheapest on the market. Recruiter Flow is even more affordable,
okay.
and it doubles as an ATS and a CRM. I think every agency owner should be using Recruiter Flow. Okay.
Okay.
I don't know if this counts as tech stack, but mm-hmm. two of my employees are based in South Africa.
Yep.
So I employ them through an employer of record, an EOR.
Okay.
And I use Remote First. So I don't know if that's a tool, but that's like another monthly platform. Charge that I pay at my business.
Remote First. Okay, interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah. I would say off the top of my head, that's my current tech stack.
Love it. Okay. I what's cool is you've really thrown yourself into this whole business development thing, and you've accelerated, like you're doing more than a lot of really experienced recruiters
mm-hmm.
On BD. And I love how you're combining automation with also very personal, a lot of personalization as well. So you've got the best of both worlds there. Let's circle back and talk about your why. So you're a mom of four.
Mm-hmm.
You've got four boys, I think.
Yes.
So tell me about your family.
Sure. So there's Atlas, who was the 5-week old back when I got laid off.
Okay.
So now he's 15 months. Wilder is 3. And then I have 2 foster sons who we're going to adopt as soon as we legally can, but the foster care system is hilarious. So they are 14 and 15.
Wow.
So I'm raising 2 teenagers and then 2 littles. So the whole gamut.
Not surprised. not everything I know about you now, but that also sounds insane.
It is insane. Yeah. The 2 foster boys moved in when I was 6 months pregnant with Wilder. So my husband and I just hit the ground running with everything we do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds like.
Yeah.
So talk to me about your why then.
Yeah. So everything I do comes back to my faith. So mm-hmm. I'm a very passionate believer in Jesus. That's a lot of why I had so much peace, like I said, with everything happening. I was like, I just trust God. Like, I know this is going to work out. I just don't know how yet. So my goal as a business owner is to have integrity in all of my dealings. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a lot of where our success has come from is that my clients do know that I'm going to do right by them, and my candidates know that I'm going to do right by them, and my team knows the same. So really, I try to bring the same energy to my business that I bring to the rest of my life. Like, I really do believe in work-life integration. Like, mm-hmm. that really is my approach. And I just want to be faithful to my call from God, faithful to my family, and faithful to everything he's given me to do.
I love that. And Julia, it's been so fun to have you on the podcast.
Thank you.
Is there anything we haven't discussed that you wanted to make sure we talk about?
Gosh, I think we went through all of it.
Right?
Yeah.
There must be more.
There's definitely more we could talk about, but people got to get back to their jobs. So let me let your audience go.
Julia, thank you so much. This was awesome.
Thank you.
Thanks for watching. If you enjoyed this conversation, check out some of my other episodes.